5'8 is our 6-year anniversary.
Yikes.
Yeah, I don't know what to do for that.
I think we should just stop doing it in the show so we don't have to figure out something to do for the anniversary.
Black Panther is just our last episode.
Yeah, that's it. We just...
Until forever, keep it up.
Movies on up forever.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. All love is created equal. I'm Dave, joined by my equal parts co-host, Mr. Ryan.
One love, Dave.
I am Dave. We are Movies on Up, our tagline for this week. All love is created equal. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you're right and we pick you, you will win a loving Movies on Up prize package. This week... And last week, this is one of those episodes that I didn't realize. Like,
yeah.
Red Sparrow came out last week, starring Jennifer Lawrence and Joel Edgerton. This week, Gringo comes out, starring David Oyelowo, Joel Edgerton, a bunch of people, directed by Nash Edgerton, brother. So I thought, hey, let's do a Joel Edgerton episode.
Yeah, it's about time. Like, the guy stars in two movies back-to-back weeks. Yeah, we'll throw him a bone. We don't talk about him a lot on this show.
I try to bring him up any chance I get, and I feel like he was one of those that for a long time it was like, there's not enough there to do an Edgerton episode. And then you look at his filmography and it's like, yeah, oh yeah, it's
there's
time.
Enough.
we can do an Edgerton. Usually we try to space out actor episodes, just laying it out there. March is kind of actor heavy. The next 3 weeks are actor specific episodes, kicking off with Edgerton. Just a heads up there. If you like stupid lists, come back in April.
Well, these are stupid lists.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Next week's is pretty bad. So we got Joel Edgerton, who I know we both like. I think I like a little bit more. I like him as a writer as well. And he directed a movie that we did an episode on.
Yeah, which may get talked about.
I'm
again
sure it'll
today.
Come up at some point. So enough about that. Ryan, your fifth favorite Joel Edgerton movie.
This is one of the recent ones. It's one of those ones that when we probably considered doing this 3 years ago, there were a lot in the past 3 years. It's like, oh, yeah, that can make the list. And I start with 2017's Bright, directed by David Ayer, starring Will Smith, Edgerton, and Nomi Rapace. I'm kind of reaching a tipping point with David Ayer and Max Landis. Each have directed and written movies that I like. Fury and Chronicle, respectively, are examples. But each are responsible for some really, really shitty movies. Suicide Squad and Victor Frankenstein, also respectively. When these guys come together for Bright, it doesn't make me think, oh, God, this is going to be awful, but I'm not thinking, oh, this is going to be wonderful either. I'm certainly pumping the brakes on it. But I think the setup to Bright is fascinating. You have a buddy cop movie that's set in a fantasy version of Los Angeles, like many David Ayer movies are. I'd even go as far as to say that like the first 20 minutes of Bright are really, really good as he's building that version of Los Angeles. He does a great job of world building there. From there, things kind of devolve into a buddy cop action movie. I mean, with that being said, the buddy cops have really great chemistry. Edgerton, this was maybe the first time I really noticed his sense of humor in movies.
He doesn't get a chance to be funny a lot.
Right. And with a guy like Will Smith, who's made a career.
It's just charisma.
Right. Out of being funny, out of being affable. Edgerton's kind of the guy in this movie. His character is kind of the guy that gets most of the laughs, and he does a fantastic job.
He's the likable one.
Right.
Next to Will Smith, which is very hard to do.
Exactly.
Will Smith is so naturally likable.
Now, I will say that Ayer, for whatever his strengths or weaknesses may be as a director, he's a fantastic action director, and this has great action in it, but I think that Landis's story never really takes advantage of the unique setup or its charismatic leads to make a great movie. I think Ayer did the best he could with what I think is actually a great idea that's folded into a weak script.
I can't stand Max Landis. I am very anti-Max Landis.
Yeah, you don't like Chronicle.
I like this movie despite Max Landis. I think everything I don't like about it comes from the script. I feel like the beginning, it's a little too heavy-handed, trying to set up the racism angle and stuff, and it's like, maybe it's cynical of me, but like I don't care about rich Hollywood royalty kid take on racism. I don't care about that.
Like, tell me about all the opportunities you didn't get.
Set up the world, that's fine. It was a little heavy-handed. Once it got into it, as it went on, and the action more took over than the story, it got a lot more entertaining. I am excited for a Bright 2 that is not bringing Landis back, so I'm all for that. I thought Edgerton and Smith, the chemistry was great. I mean, Edgerton was pretty much unrecognizable.
Like, oh, yeah.
If you didn't know it was him, you don't know it's him, because doesn't sound like him, doesn't look like him. He was good. The jokes were good. The last, like, yeah. One of his last lines, like, I still hate Matt. I don't know. I think it's all right. The chemistry between the two is good. It did not make my top five. It wasn't also ran. I like it more than I should have. And I think that the perfect thing, it feels like it was made by the Netflix algorithm.
Yeah.
You like buddy cop movies? You like Lord of the Rings?
You like Will Smith?
You like dragons? Here. And I mean, Noomi Pace was a good villain. The fight scenes with the elves especially I thought were fantastic. So I'm excited for Bright 2. I think it should be a lot better, because I think anything without Max Landis is just generally going to be a lot better.
For that franchise, the future looks brighter.
Yes. My number five goes back a bit further and goes over to Australia, where it came from. This was written by Joel Edgerton, directed by his brother Nash. It is The Square, starring David Roberts, Claire VanderVoom, Kieran Darcy Smith, Joel Edgerton. His part's not as big in this one as others. It's very much David Roberts' movie. But you get that sense of what Edgerton does very well as a writer is suspense and just really bad things happening and having this overall sense of dread. His directorial debut that'll come up has that feeling to it. Another movie that he wrote that's coming up on my list a bit higher is the same. He has this just sense of dread to where if Joel Edgerton is going to write a bad day for you, you're fucked.
It's a really bad day.
Yeah. And The Square is one of those. It's got your twists and turns, and it is a bit more of a slow burn than the rest of the stuff on my list. It's not your fast-paced action movie. It's not a high-end octane thriller, but it's really suspenseful, real dreadful, and very well acted and written.
We'll probably have a couple movies that are written by Edgerton on the list. My number four, it was also written by him. Gavin O'Connor's Jane Got a Gun from 2015, starring Jane, Natalie Portman, Joel Edgerton, and Ewan McGregor. Back when we did our news episodes, this was a movie that I think was always...
It was in the news a lot.
Yeah, not necessarily for good reasons. We had actors dropping out, parts being recast, directors being replaced, even as shooting was going on. Seems like that's kind of the story of every Star Wars movie by now. But after bringing on O'Connor, more on him in a couple minutes too, and surrounding him with some Star Wars folks, they managed to, I believe, save the movie. One thing that's always consistent with Edgerton... Like I said, he wrote the screenplay for this.
It was a rewrite. Brian Duffield had the original script, but when Edgerton came on, him and Anthony Tembakis kind of reworked it all. So it wasn't a start from scratch, Edgerton's script, but his handprint was definitely
But he was one of the guys that was kind of always involved with the project from the writing side. I think he was originally set to play Ewan's character, and then he switched once one of the other actors left.
It was Fassbender, and this went all over the place.
Yes, it did. His character, Frost, that he ended up playing, is given kind of a rather large shit sandwich of a task. He's got to save his... ex-fiance's husband from a gang of killers, but he seems to kind of eat that sandwich with more cool Joel Edgerton intensity than I think most men could muster, and actually kind of would befit a real cowboy. And as great as Portman and Edgerton are in the movie, McGregor I loved in this movie. He's almost like this living cartoon version of a mustachioed, like, Snidely Whiplash. Like, that's what Ewan McGregor is.
He's the Western cartoon villain in this movie, but he plays it perfectly.
Right.
For coming in such last minute and throwing yourself into it like this was very, very impressive.
This movie is not cartoony in the least. And
he
his
makes
performance,
it work.
Right, yeah, his performance normally could stick out, but it doesn't in this. I think he jumps seamlessly from businessman to douchebag and back and forth just effortlessly. And it gives, I think, the movie a bit more flair than it's got from... Edgerton and Portman, who play things a little more muted.
Don't get me wrong. I'd love to see Fassbender in Edgerton's role and Edgerton and but after everything it went through, it came out okay. Because I think Gyllenhaal was in there at some point. I think Bradley Cooper was thrown in.
I think you were supposed to be in it.
I was. I was actually playing Jane.
I was
had to
say,
back
yeah.
out, and Natalie Portman picked it up.
She did all right.
It's one of those that it shouldn't have came out okay with everything, and it did. It went through directors, I think. Forget who was the director that she was going to do it, and she backed out like the day before filming. My number four, another Australian movie. It did get a release over here, though. Written and directed by Kieran Darcy Smith, starring Joel Edgerton, Teresa Palmer, and Felicity Price. It is Wish You Were Here a guy and his wife and her sister and her new boyfriend go on vacation to Cambodia, and only three of them come back, and none of them want to talk about it. And it's not written by Edgerton, but it feels like a very Edgerton script. It was co-written by Felicity Price, who stars with them, and Kieran Darcy Smith, who works with Edgerton quite a bit. You have these people's lives unraveling. You know, one of them didn't come back from vacation and nobody wants to talk about it. So you kind of have that when his sister shows up wondering where he is, like kind of unravel. And then it slowly builds up to some bad stuff happened on that trip. Not just to the one that didn't come back, but everybody's life is different. It's another one of those. It's a slow burn. Edgerton has this intensity to him that a lot of movies, it's one of my also-rans, I assume it's on your list, it could be described as a slow burn, but he brings this intensity that even when there's not much going on screen, like, he's compelling. He brings this sense that, like, oh, something's going to happen, and it builds up to it. And most of his movies do build up to pretty quality climaxes.
My number three, Edgerton really doesn't show up until the climax. I would go so far as to say it's probably the biggest movie that we have on either of our lists. It doesn't get much bigger than Catherine Bigelow's Zero Dark Thirty from 2012, starring Jessica Chastain, Jason Clarke, and as members of the SEAL Team 6, Joel Edgerton and Chris Pratt. That's some pretty solid star power.
And I mean, there's,
it doesn't show up until the end of the movie.
Everybody's in that movie. Like, there's that scene around the table where it's Clarke and Chastain. I think Gandolfini's there. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's...
There are a ton of folks that are kind of in and out of this movie. But like I said, one of the ones that's in the movie almost... basically, not until Zero Dark Thirty, is Edgerton and Pratt. They are kind of putting into action years of work put in by Jessica Chastain's character. And in case you may have thought that one person basically rolled over on Bin Laden one day just out of the blue, gave the location of his hideout, we sent in some dudes to mop him up, Catherine Bigelow is here to tell you that there was much, much, much more to the story than that. I think it's a story that I think those of us that were alive when President Barry came on the TV and said, hey, we got this guy. I think everybody remembers that. We've had a couple moments in our adult life that you can remember exactly where you were when that came on the TV. This is one of those that I don't recall knowing that we were anywhere near getting him. And then, oh, he's dead. We dumped him over the side of a boat. This movie, almost in excruciating detail, lays out the groundwork that was put in by a lot of our intelligence community. As ugly as it may have been, you know, we sort of hop from detainee to detainee, from continent to continent. It's kind of bordering on informational overload, but I think Bigelow does a fantastic job of keeping things tight and sort of dragging us through what could be a lot of minutiae. I think that this movie, if you were going to make a movie about killing Osama bin Laden, it very easily could have been like a Rambo. We're just going to follow.
Jingoistic, like.
Right. We're going to drop the SEAL Team 6. We're going to follow them a couple hours before the mission and basically the mop up, and that's going to be it. This movie is about killing Osama bin Laden, but the mission really started much, much before the day that he actually got.
Jessica Chastain gave, like, this is her movie. Like, this was one of my also-rans. I left it off just because it's not like an Edgerton. There were enough Edgerton movies that I had to put on there. Chastain carries this movie, and it's a shame she didn't get an Oscar. Like, it was one of those years where it's like there were two that deserved it, and only one of them could get it. But she's so powerful in this movie, and I absolutely loved it. My number three from 2005, a little bit different. We talk about intensity, and we talked about him not really doing comedy that you don't get to see in Bright. He did do a pretty whimsical movie in 2005 when he did Kinky Boots with Chiwetel Ejiofor, Nick Frost, Linda Bassett. I love this movie. It's a feel-good, fun movie. He doesn't get a lot of jokes in it. It's very much Chiwetel Ejiofor as Lola, who's this drag queen that comes in and tries to transform Edgerton's family's shoe business to making boots for cross-dressers and the impact that makes on this small British town. This movie is really, really fun. I love Chiwetel Ejiofor. Two of my favorite actors, two of the most intense actors that I love watching in a not intense movie at all. like generally, if you put Chiwetel and Edgerton on screen together, it's going to be pretty tense. This is the opposite, but it's so much fun. And it's just one of those feel-good British movies that we got a ton of in like that 10-year span from late 90s, early aughts.
My number two is basically everything your three was not. It is intense. You mentioned when Joel Edgerton writes stuff, it's generally things don't go well. Like, you can have a really, really bad go of it. And this is the movie that you had mentioned earlier, his directorial debut. You also wrote 2015's The Gift, starring Jason Bateman, Edgerton, and Rebecca Hall as well. Joel Edgerton directs Joel Edgerton in a story written by Joel Edgerton. What's even more impressive than the workload is that as a writer, director, and actor, I think he absolutely kills it in this movie. His portrayal of Gordo the Weirdo kind of hooks you, and the tension that's created between Gordo and Rebecca Hall by Edgerton the director keeps you more and more uneasy until Edgerton the writer hits you over the head with this wonderful ending and kind of pays everything off, kind of. It's ambiguous, but at the same time, the emotions that we are put through right along with Jason Bateman's Simon is kind of the point of it. We go through that ride much in the same way he does without being specifically told what the outcome is. I guess the payback is in the journey, and you can't certainly take that away from him. It's a really unique story and a wonderful directorial debut. Edgerton is going to pull triple duty later this year. He's adapting Gerard Conley's book, Boy Erased, in September, also directing it and starring it. I'm sure we're going to probably talk more about that one as the fall preview comes around. But for an actor list, we've already had, what, three movies that were written by him? And he's appeared in all of them. I mean, the guy is one of the most talented people in Hollywood that I don't think...
is a household name.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, I think, is by design. Because sure. even The Gift...
It's not a Joel Edgerton movie. Right.
It's not a Joel... Like, it's a Jason Bateman movie. Like, he puts Jason Bateman front and center.
Yeah.
And I think that works so well, is he takes the Hannibal Lecter approach, where Gordo could have had a lot more screen time. But you go a lot of time in between Gordo appearances, and it makes the payoff that much more worth it. So he didn't put himself front and center. He let his directing and his writing take charge and put his acting third. But yeah, he is one of the most multi-talented that I feel like people are getting to where they know him to see him. They may not know the name, but they've seen him in something, because he's the amount of movies he's done family movies. He's done such a wide range of stuff.
He's done the Star Wars.
My number two, I feel like we might cross over here, and I might be stealing your number one.
Yeah, probably.
But it is another Gavin O'Connor movie from 2011. I talked about Kinky Boots, starring Ejiofor and Edgerton, as two of my favorite actors. This is another example, starring Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton. It is Warrior, written by Gavin O'Connor and also co-written by Tim Backus, who co-wrote...
Jane Got a Gun.
Yeah, worked with Edgerton. So, I mean, he's got his circle that he works with a lot. This movie, I feel like, went under the radar. It got a wide release, but then I feel like just didn't have the impact that
it
should have.
Nick Nolte was nominated for an Academy Award for it.
Yeah, but I don't think people talk about Warrior like they should. For as big as MMA is and stuff, and yeah, okay, there are some coincidences that happen that maybe make it a little convenient, but damn, this movie is powerful. It reminds me of Rocky.
Yeah.
Whereas it's not so much about the boxing as it's about the characters.
This is my number one, so I'll just continue talking about it, and we'll just smash it all together. Yeah, it's very much like Rocky, except for the fact that at the end of the movie, instead of fighting Apollo Creed, Rocky would be fighting his brother.
His brother, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the family drama there, the dynamic between the brothers and the estranged dad, and even why each of them need the money. They're like, it's not about like fame. It's really about just Tom Hardy trying to fulfill a promise from when he was overseas. You've got Joel Edgerton's character who gets fired from his job as a teacher. It's a story about a bunch of people that are down on their luck, and they're all kind of going after the same thing. And it's one of the very few movies that, I guess, for the most part, I don't know. Like, I don't know which of them is the protagonist. I don't think either of them are.
It's not designed as a good guy versus bad guy. And that's why, when it gets to the fight, when Rocky's fighting Ivan Drago or Clubber Lang, like, you know who you want to win. In this, there's not a clear-cut winner, and I think that makes that last fight that much more compelling, because it is so powerful, and you know both of these guys, and you haven't been told to root against either one of them.
Yeah, I mean, maybe
like their cases are laid out. You can like them both, you can dislike them both, but
I think Tommy is a little harder to like because he's a bit more gruff. But when you find out his backstory, you're like, all right, well, he's a really good guy too. And just the way he's wrecking people, I think it's sort of set up that Brendan is going to be the underdog and he's going up against his brother who was trained by his dad. And this is a family drama that just happens to be set with a backdrop of MMA. And I think you're right. It's probably massively underrated everywhere except this podcast. I put it on a ton of lists and it's generally really high. Because, man, I love this movie. I think it's acted wonderfully by all three leads. I'm happy that Nick Nolte got nominated, but I certainly think that either Hardy or Edgerton, if not
and
both.
And Kevin O'Connor.
Yeah.
This movie is so well done. It's one of those that it's not just a good movie. Like, this is a great movie. And this is the kind of movie that I feel like should have gotten Oscar love when it did.
I believe strongly, if this was not an MMA movie, if they were just boxing, it gets nominated.
Possibly.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I'm not even an MMA fan, but like MMA to be into it from that angle. It's just a well-written, well-acted, well-directed movie. My number one, also well-written and well-acted and directed, written and directed by David Michaud. It is what introduced me to Joel Edgerton back in 2010. It is Animal Kingdom. Just an awesome story. 17-year-old kid's mom dies of an OD. And he's forced to go live with his crime family that his mother tried so hard to keep him away from. Jackie Weaver got an Oscar nom for this, which was well-deserved. She's amazing in this. Joel Edgerton is Baz, kind of the main guy of the family. It's dark. It goes places you don't expect it to. It's adapted. It's currently on, I don't know, maybe USA.
One of those cable, basically.
Yeah, there's a show. It's going into the third season. It's not a bad show. The movie's better, but like they did take the basis of the movie and turn it into a pretty decent show. But I mean, just Jackie Weaver, Joel Edgerton, just watching those two back and forth together, it's ridiculously intense. And there are some scenes in it that are just hard to watch because it just gets so brutal. But Animal Kingdom, it was hard not, as much as I wanted Warrior to be number one, this is what introduced me to Edgerton, and this is what made me seek out The Square to watch. One that I shocked didn't make your list, Midnight Special.
It was circled on the list.
I thought it would be on there. I left it off just because
we've talked about it more recently.
Yeah.
But
he's really good in that.
Him and Shannon are fantastic.
Two of the most intense. Like, he works with intense people. Some of these co-stars that he's worked with, Hardy, Edgefor, you know, like he's working with really intense co-stars. And Midnight Special, and then It Comes at Night, I liked. That was just last year.
I thought that was going to be on your list. That one and most of the Australian ones, I just stayed away from because I knew they'd be on there. Yeah. I like Smokin' Aces a lot. He's not in that a ton, but I think as an ensemble, like that's a fun group of hitmen, assassin guys, I guess.
I think that movie was, I like the idea more than the execution. Like, yeah. I thought the style kind of got in the way.
It sort of did, but I like Black Mass, and a movie that, again, if it's called anything else, it's probably on the list, but as much as we revere The Thing around these parts, he showed up in that
he was good
prequel.
In that.
Yeah, he's really good. Him and Mary Elizabeth Winstead are fantastic in that
movie.
Yeah, they just got saddled with something that wasn't quite up to snuff.
Because even something like Felony, it's worth a watch. Like, it was him and Jai Courtney brings that one down, but it's him and Tom Wilkinson. So, I mean, who's another really intense actor? I mean, he did The Odd Life of Jennifer Garner. The Odd Life of Timothy Green with Jennifer Garner. So, I mean, he's done a lot of stuff. And, I mean, and then obviously the Star Wars stuff. He was in Ned Kelly because any Australian actor was in Ned Kelly. I really like him. He's a throwback. I think he's not your Brad Pitt handsome. He goes out there, you throw him in any role. He's the dad in a family movie. He's the son of a crime family. Like, everything he does, he kind of nails. And I'm a bit of a fan. Go out last week and see him in Red Sparrow. Go this week, see him in Gringo, which looks great. I can't wait for that one. David Oyelowo looks awesome. Nash Edgerton.
Another Star Wars guy.
Yeah, Nash Edgerton, I like as a director. He didn't come up a whole bunch, but I like Nash
came
Edgerton.
Up once.
Yeah, so
he didn't get the run Gavin O'Connor got on this show. No. But
so that's our J Edge episode. Next week we got our
AJ
episode. Tomb Raider comes out, starring Alicia Vikander and Wilton Goggins or whatever his name is, Walton Goggins. So we thought, hey, obvious time to do an Angelina Jolie episode. She's not in this one, but she was the first Laura Croft on screen. So, and Vikander hasn't had the filmography to do it yet.
There'd be a lot of crossover.
Yeah, and we just did a Garland movie, so I don't want to just do Ex Machina again. And so next week we'll do our favorite Angelina Jolie movies. Can we get to five? We'll see.
Collectively, yes.
But until then,
keep it up.